Hello, my name is Dr. Kara King.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Rensel, and we are your host for Inspirations and Insights from Cleveland Clinic Women Docs.
In this podcast, we will share conversations with women doctors from all career stages and practices, exploring the highlights and challenges of being a woman in medicine.
We hope these thought-provoking stories inspire you and provide insight into the unique challenges and accomplishments of remarkable women docs. Okay, everyone, we have a very exciting guest today. We have Dr. Susan Rehm. Dr. Rehm, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Yes, Dr. Rehm is our Vice Chair of the Department of Infectious Disease here at Cleveland Clinic and Associate Chief of Staff. That seems like a lot of work. How are you doing?
Just having fun.
Are you?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, absolutely. More and more grateful all the time for all the opportunities we have.
Oh, that's amazing. So, Associate Chief of Staff, that does seem like a big role because Cleveland Clinic is growing and growing. We're global now, and we have, 11,000 doctors or maybe more now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I, of course, have been here since I've been training in internal medicine and then on to ID and then on to the staff. And the way I think about it, just for this, our main campus, we've gone from essentially 400 physicians to 4,000 physicians just on this campus since I started here. And it's kind of an amazing thing to think about it. I remember when I first came to the clinic as a resident, I think there were 10,000 employees overall, and main campus was the only campus. Well, I was walking around like, oh my gosh, this place is so huge. The town I grew up in was about 4,000 people. And so I'm thinking, this is 2.5 times the size of my hometown. This is big. And feeling overwhelmed. But I think what we find out, and that this is still true no matter what our size is, that as we, I'll say, walk around, as we go around doing our thing, you learn your neighborhood. You learn who your teams are. You build that relationship, and then it's that network of relationships that really allows us to break it down.
I love that. Yeah, and you've led in so many different areas in infectious disease, locally, regionally, nationally, globally, especially during a global pandemic. Can you share some of your surprise learnings from seeing infectious disease from different perspectives, like in the neighborhoods like you're speaking about, but also from your, you know, nonprofit view and your vice chair view?
The funny thing about, I guess, my career in ID is I see it bookended by a couple of things. And this is only a matter of timing. But just as I started my fellowship, AIDS came along. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm ending my clinical career, we just finished with COVID. And it's very interesting to compare and contrast those two pandemics, in essence, very different diseases, very different manifestations and so on, but bringing out so many commonalities, the whole importance of public health infrastructure, which people may or may not appreciate, is slightly different than the practice of clinical infectious diseases. We are certainly intertwined, but we're not the same thing. Likewise, you know, in a healthcare setting, infection prevention, or what we used to call infection control, is not the same as clinical infectious diseases, but we intersect. So those neighborhoods are neighborhoods that were reactivated during both of the pandemics. And both of the pandemics really allowed us to intersect with people that we would not have been intersecting with otherwise. So, if, you know, amongst all the death and destruction and the horrible things, there are wonderful learnings, I think, from each. And certainly some things that I wish that the world would have learned a little bit better so that we wouldn't have to repeat it. But such is the nature of human beings.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to give us a few of those, your wishes, for that, so we're prepared for the next pandemic?
I guess if I could wave my magic wand, and by the way, I have 3 magic wands.
Oh, good. Thank goodness.
But they're not all that powerful. But
I disagree.
If I could wave my magic wand, it would be to depoliticize public health.
Yes. Yeah. Just people. It's neighborhoods, right? It's just caring for your neighbors. Yeah, I love that. So you mentioned your small town and coming to the big town of Cleveland. So from a small town to Cleveland, tell us your early journeys into medicine.
My early journeys into medicine, actually, well, I started out working in a medical microbiology lab, not medical microbiology, in a laboratory, medical laboratory, in our small town hospital. This was a 40-bed hospital.
40. Wow. Okay.
I walked to work. I cleaned test tubes. Yes. Okay. This was before everything was disposable. I filed lab reports. I drew blood. I worked up to blood drawing. That was a stretch goal for me. And I also was responsible for walking the lab results over to the doctor's lounge and putting them into all the doctor's mailboxes, which were there. So it was actually on one of those trips where I ran into a family medicine doc whom I knew, but not all that well. But he was being polite and said, "Hey, you're in college now. What are you doing? What are you studying?" I think I had just finished my freshman year at that time. And he said, "What are you thinking about?" And I said, "Well, I went in to teach, but I'm getting a little disillusioned with that for a variety of reasons. So I think maybe I'll be a med tech." And he said, "Why don't you try for medical school?" Yeah. I didn't say much at the time, but that question haunted me. Very good coaching question.
Yes.
Actually. And so the rest is history, as you say. I decided to switch. It didn't take that much. And at that time, Nebraska had a three-year program, so you could be accepted to medical school after 3 years of undergrad, and then a three-year medical school. So I went through both in 6 years and then came out to Cleveland.
Love it. And you've been here ever since.
Yeah.
Very easy resume, right? I've only had like one job.
Yes. Wow. Wow. I love that. Well, that does show the power of a question, right? A coaching question. Yes.
Yeah. And I should have stated it better. He may have actually said why. We would not, as a coach, say why.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think he might say, "Have you thought about?"
Yes, yes, yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. I love it. So don't forget to keep asking, poking people a little accountability, give them a little time to think about their next steps, huh? So career transition is always something you've been interested in, it sounds like, through many different roles. What are some of your favorite roles here at Cleveland Clinic to support people in their career transitions?
Well, I would like to say that almost any role can do that. And as a matter of fact, you know, I say I've only had one job for a long time. The reality is there have been, you know, micro and macro transitions within that job. And I am very grateful for having been allowed to occasionally redefine myself or to be asked to do something else. And that took the form of, at the beginning, just committee memberships. It's interesting. There were so many opportunities on various education-based committees, and then later search committees, review committees for the organization, pharmacy and therapeutics committees, all of those kinds of things. And the value of that at the time, I really didn't know. But part of it, in retrospect, is all of the networking contacts and new neighborhoods that I was able to walk through, you know, some of which were literally a walkthrough, and some of them became long-term neighborhoods for me as well. And I'm very lucky from the standpoint that as an infectious disease doctor, I spend most of my time in the hospital doing hospital consultations, and it's with every specialty. So literally every different part of the organization was part of my clinical world as well. And that was really cool. So by the mid-90s, and I was elected to the Board of Governors, to our governing board, there was already that background there. And one of the things that I really value is, you know, I work a lot with surgeons. And it was, I have to give credit, a colorectal surgeon who was one of my biggest backers, a male colorectal surgeon, in getting on the Board of Governors, which was very cool. And, you know, just immediately before that, I had started as internal medicine program director after having been an infectious disease program director. So there were people who were sponsoring me. I wouldn't have said that word at that time, but they were sponsoring me. They were looking out for me. They were putting my name forward in a way that allowed me to continue to grow in roles and so on. So, you know, from the Board of Governors, that kind of led into the Associate Chief of Staff work, which led into the physician health work, which initially was quite narrowly focused on impairment. And over the years grew, I like to say, from impairment to distress or burnout to wellness. The way we'd love to approach it, it would be to say, how do we keep people well? Mm-hmm. In addition to when things aren't going well, how do we move forward? My attitude is that we are a group of incredibly accomplished people who are lucky enough to practice with each other. Mm-hmm. And when things are rough, how do we go back to that gem that is there and move forward?
That was amazing. I am so excited to have you on today. I have been waiting for this interview for a very long time. So thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So I'm going to continue your discussion about this area of wellness and burnout, because I don't want to let this go quite yet. And I love your coaching perspective on this as well, because it offers a really unique place for wellness. I always say wellness is truly two things to me. It's coaching and a scribe. If I have those two things, I am very well. Right?
Love it.
So with that being said, there's a lot of talk about burnout and this area of resilience, right? And I've even read things such as burnout can be prevented or even reversed through cultivating resilience. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's true?
I have to tell you, I have mixed feelings about using the term resilience, because it kind of harkens back to the bad old days of, if you're burned out, there's something wrong with you. Everybody else is doing it. Everybody else is getting along fine. What's the matter with you? Why can't you hack it? And I think a more nuanced approach is to say, first of all, that there are major problems with our systems. So that is not under the control of most of us. It is the environment that is around us. So what we're left with is trying to optimize our coping ability to a certain extent, and to remember the things that are most important to us. Because if we can tap back into why we're here, we will be in much better shape to be able to withstand things. So resilience, to me, I think everybody who's here is resilient. You wouldn't be here unless, and I say here, but I mean in any healthcare setting.
Correct.
People who have gone through training to be a healthcare professional or a caring professional in, you know, fill in the blank other areas, whether it's teaching or the ministry or nursing or, you know, or police work for that matter. You don't get there unless you are resilient. So the question to me is, how do you tap into those things that have helped you in the past and that will make you even more receptive to growth in the future?
Beautifully put. And I could not agree more, right? Like finding your true north and your passion that brought you here, and then tapping into that when things feel hard, right? Or you feel stuck.
Yep, absolutely. It's, you know, unfortunately, if we started today and we had all the resources in the world, the system will not be fixed very quickly. And so,
true.
Yeah. So in the meantime, tapping into that, and I will go back to my walk through the neighborhoods and relabel the neighborhoods as unofficial teams. It is those teams that help us remember why we're here and support us when things are not necessarily working in the same direction. You know, I think teamwork is almost, it's tossed around as too light of a term in some way. So obviously teams help patients, right? They get it when the people around them can, I'll say, finish each other's sentences, so to speak, you know, when they know each other, when they know how it works, all of those kind of things. That's great for patients. But I think it's also really great for the members of the team, the multidisciplinary members of the team. That's an essence of wellness, to be in a work situation where you are surrounded by people who share the goals, who are all moving in the same direction, and each contributing what they can to making that all work.
I love that. And not having necessarily the same opinion, you don't want that. You just want the same common goal, right? And differing perspectives and a psychologically safe space to voice that, because that's really where growth happens, right?
That's when growth happens, and you know, that's when respectful discussion happens. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When there is trust, to be able to disagree, to be able to modify, whatever, but to work together toward the goal that's there.
It can feel sometimes like a beautiful dance. We talk about this in the operating room, like when you're with an assistant or a team that we're just all in the same flow. Yep. It just feels so fulfilling, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think of the operating room, and it this is when it's too bad this is just audio, but I'm going to put my hand out like, okay. And the person there next to you puts into your hand exactly the instrument that you want at that time. Without you having to say anything, it's there. Isn't exactly that the essence of teamwork?
And it's probably not what I'm asking for, because I'm probably asking for the wrong instrument, but I put in my hand what I really actually want. That's when you know you have the most amazing team. Like, King, you actually don't want what you're asking for. You want this. And you're like, that's actually exactly correct.
Well, and that's of the things that's been so hard, I think, as our flow has been disrupted. Fill in the blank. Obviously, the big thing is COVID, right? And you know, people are out. There's turnover, all of that kind of stuff. And you know, so how do you continue to build? You know, how do you have a team when you may have new faces in the mix over and over and over again? So a lot of that, I think, is intent.
Yes.
Along with the respect.
So true. Yeah.
And, you know, this term that has really surfaced, I feel like, over the pandemic is languishing, right? Where I'm not necessarily burnt out. I'm not depressed, right? I still have hope. I'm still excited to come to work. But there's just this kind of cloud over my creativity, or a cloud over my flow state. And just acknowledging that and knowing how to get back can be a journey in and of itself, which is where I think coaching has been a huge, huge part of my life over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think we've all grown in thinking about those things and maybe being more mindful of our career arcs than we might have been otherwise. This is what I consider a hidden gift being in quotes, of having lived through what we've lived through in the past 3 years, is just the opportunity to think about it a little bit more specifically, with a little bit more insight into what's actually going on.
Exactly. And when you mention your career arc, it brings me back to something you said earlier with Mary about how you've had a few moments where you've had to redefine yourself. And you said sometimes it's been a self, you know, a decision that you made amongst yourself that you were going to make that kind of that pivot. And sometimes it's been external factors asking you to make that pivot. So I'm just curious, in people who are early career or mid-career, do you have any advice about being reflective and knowing when to make that pivot? Like, how did you know when to do that?
It's a great question. And I think that probably gotten better over the years at acknowledging what it is that drives me you know, what motivates me? What do I love doing? What do I want to do more of? Maybe I could leave behind, so to speak. And then allowing myself what we would in coaching call the magic wand moment. You know, if you could do anything that you wanted to do, if you could rewrite your job description, what would that look like?
Yeah.
Years ago, Mary mentioned, I had been involved for a number of years with a nonprofit in infectious diseases, and I started out on the board and then moved into leadership roles and then ended with being a medical director for this nonprofit for a number of years. And so as I was finishing my presidency, the person who was actually, it was a slightly different title, but it was a physician who was a senior director, so to speak, in a salaried position, left. We actually had turnover on the presidency of the board. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, what are we going to do? We put out feelers to try to get someone into that salaried leadership position, and it just wasn't happening. And I don't know how it hit me one day. I thought, you know what? I could do the parts of this job that I like. I could do it remotely. I could do it part-time. I could still keep doing what I'm doing at the clinic. And so I pitched it. I said, hey, you know, how about we do a part-time distant thing? And they went for it. I did it more as a kind of a consultancy. The reimbursement went back to the department. I was still full-time here. And it was a wonderful opportunity for many reasons, but one of the things was that I got to meet people from all over the infectious disease community and public health community just in the course of my work. The contacts I made during that stint, in addition to the fun of, you know, being involved in that kind of work, which include media work, things like that, it was really cool. But I'll never forget kind of that feeling when that idea hit me, like, oh, I could, what about this? I could give this a try. And unusually enough for me, I didn't ask permission.
Yes, I love that.
I just kind of said, okay, here's what I'm thinking about, and went back to it. And it's funny, I recall our upper-level leadership at the time said, hey, that sounds like a really good retirement job.
You're like, hey.
Okay, well, I'm not retiring.
Let me be clear.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, but that's what I would invite people to do. You know, it's think about what it is you like, and how can you do more of that within your current job or outside that role? Just allow yourself to dream about it. It is that creativity and that mm-hmm. dreaming and I'll go back to your well-being comment. It's healthy. It's good
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
It activates the parasympathetic nervous system. I'm talking to with a neurologist next door. I realize that. But allow me, you know, ID has to do a little bit of everything.
I'm just a surgeon. You can yeah. give it to me.
There you go. Whatever. Yeah, don't hit the vagus. Instead of what we do every day, which quite frankly is totally sympathetic drive. Right.
It's true.
That's not healthy.
Fight all day.
That mm-hmm. in any way. So, just thinking about it, just visualizing it, just allowing yourself that option, even if you don't do it, dream it.
I love this, and you know that magic wand that you mentioned, right? I call it the ideal state. Give yourself space to reflect on that ideal state, right?
Yes.
And then it takes bravery and it takes courage to do what you did, right? To go to your boss and say, hey, I'm presenting this. But what's the worst that can happen? They can say no, right? And it will likely move you closer to that ideal state. So I think that is just a really amazing piece of advice. And also giving yourself space to understand what may not feel good anymore. Like things that you may have thought were what you wanted to do when you got out. Take the time to notice what feels like work or what's painful to hit that deadline, right? And that to me, listen to that. Like, I thought I loved this, but I cannot meet the deadline to get these presentations done on topic X. Maybe it's time to shift. Maybe I'm actually not enjoying it as much as I thought I was.
Well, I think the other thing to realize in that process is something that came out in the literature, and I know you've read a ton of Tate Shanafelt's work, but yes. One of his early pieces pointed out that if we're doing what we really love to do, our top passion, only 20% of the time, that's enough to sustain us. You know, so the reality is there are very few situations where you're doing what you love to do 100% of the time. That the people who have that are really, really lucky. But most of us, there are things that are kind of baggage that you have to do it. And the only thing that you can do is to, you know, revel in your 20% that you love and to think about ways to, for that 80%, yeah, to be less burdensome.
Exactly. Mary and I, in our 0.5% podcast time, we are obsessed. This brings us joy.
It sure does. Okay. Well, I love hearing how you're so willing to say yes and to think deeply about when people ask a question of you, like way back in Nebraska when you were physically delivering the results to the mailboxes. I love that, how that, like you said, got stuck in your head. So here you are, Susan. I want to thank you for all your years of service to Cleveland Clinic, because I don't want to say how many years, but a few decades are under your belt here at Cleveland Clinic. And do you have a magic wand for your next phase? Have you taken some magic wand time?
Yes, I will continue to coach and to consult, but it probably won't be as much clinical consulting as others. And I'm going to continue to work with the medical school. And the main thing is, I think I'm buying a little bit of my time. I can set my pace a little bit more mindfully, so to speak. And I'm trying to leave space to explore as well. I was talking with my personal coach a few weeks ago about, you know, what I envisioned doing after I was through with my current job. And he said, are you really leaving that job? Another question that stuck in my head. Even though it's a closed-end question, I will take it for I will take it
no judgment,
for what it
yes.
what it is. When that happens, I tell him that I'm taking this as a rhetorical question, and it has helped to refine it, because I think to really allow possibilities, I can't simply go from being scheduled in this way to scheduled in another way. I've got to leave more clear space, so to speak. I have a friend who does a little bit of music composition, and he is obsessed with telling me, "Oh, listen to all the space in that song. It's awesome. You know, you don't have to put 25 notes on every beat.
Right.
You've got to leave a little bit of space." So I'm by myself a little bit of space.
I love that. Is there someone that modeled this for you, this willingness to say yes and to kind of explore? Sounds like your career has been full of exploration. You have one job but many hats, and you've looked at this at all different levels, like we talked about, so many neighborhoods, you know, here locally and regionally and globally. Is there anyone that you feel like you're modeling them, or is it a group of folks that have shown a light or shined a light on how to maintain exploration in your career?
I have to give credit to a ton of people. You know, early mentors, I think, were like Marty McHenry. And, you know, we're so lucky to have his daughter with us on the staff, who is as incredible as he was in her way. And, you know, I think of myself as taking the best of from a lot of people and so on. So I too numerous to mention. And I will also say a lot of people who are not in medicine, you know, which I think for those of us who have been nose to the grindstone for year after year after year, it's very healthy to just take ourselves out of that medical milieu and examine and look and learn from people who've had a different milieu, who've you know, gone about things perhaps a little bit differently. That was one of the things I really appreciated when I was at Weatherhead doing my coaching certificate. There were people there from all walks of life, and you know, the commonalities were far, far, far in excess of the differences. But when you're in it, when you're the frog who's being boiled, so to speak, we don't necessarily appreciate that. So I think there's so much to learn from everybody around us.
Wow, that may, yes, I love your perspective. Just to keep an open mind and explore and take the best learning from those you interact with. That's amazing. Thank you for your wonderful example of building a really interesting, deeply thoughtful career where you just continued to explore and learn from others. And the neighborhoods, I think the neighborhood is a really neat perspective that you've given me, that you know, we have different neighborhoods that we cross through each day, and to just stop and learn and look around and explore. That's wonderful. What are some parting words you would like to give our listeners today?
Well, get out there and keep walking. You don't know what neighborhood you're going to run into, and you don't know who you're going to run into or who may be your inspiration for the day. But we are so fortunate because we've got 80,000 plus stories out there, and we don't have to physically walk anymore. We interact in a variety of ways. So get out there and just get to know people.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you for sharing your time with us. We wish you well on your journey.
Thanks, and good luck to you guys. This is a fabulous opportunity.
Everybody, go out there, explore a new neighborhood today. Keep walking.
Thank you for listening today. Join us again as we draw inspirations and insights from women doctors past, present, and future. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WPSA1. That's at WPSA and the number 1. This podcast is supported by Cleveland Clinic's Women's Professional Staff Association as part of the Cleveland Clinic Centennial Celebration.